Hi folks, this is Christian with another edition of the Ice Age Farmer Podcast. As always, mapping a path forward to prosperity, building resilient, self-sufficient communities, and sharing knowledge in the grand solar minimum. Today is August 19th, 2017, and this is episode 10 of the podcast. Before I even give an outline of today's show, I did want to just say thank you to everyone who wrote in with some kind words and support about my father-in-law. I am still here in Germany, and I really appreciate all the love and support that I received. It's been a nice thing to get while I'm here out of the country, away from the homestead, and away from the farm. So what that has meant is that I've been investing my time, when possible, away from that, into some infrastructure for the show. And I think that will show with what we talk about today. So with that, the outline for today's show, we'll be talking about, we'll be starting off with an icebreaker, a bit of history. Actually, as promised last episode, and I neglected to include it, we'll be talking about the 1360 hailstorm that decimated an English army. We'll then be getting into some feedback from the community, including tips from the Farmer's Almanac, geodesic dome greenhouse information, some folks who describe how to grow potatoes in tires, and finally lasagna gardening as a no-till description of a no-till method. I'll be taking a couple questions. You can send yours to iceagefarmer@gmail.com or use the SpeakPipe box on iceagefarmer.com to send me a voicemail. The questions today we'll be hitting are, what are the most nutrient-dense crops that would make sense in trying to achieve self-sufficiency, as well as what would be the cold hardy-est varieties of those. So we'll look at that. And then finally, I'll be starting a new segment called the Crop Focus segment. I'll be launching off with the talking about sunflowers, which I really enjoy as a staple of my diet using sunflower microgreens. But obviously there are uses beyond that, and sunflower oil is something that's very handy, and you could be producing that at home when you can't go out and get olive oil or coconut oil. So we'll be taking a look at sunflowers today. And before we do all that, I would like to mention two new ways that I've introduced for you to contribute to the Ice Age Farmer community. The first, as several folks have requested, I went ahead and set up a Patreon at patreon.com/iceagefarmer. Now, I don't like the idea, I simply don't, of requiring payment to get information, especially as we enter the grand solar minimum. It's clear we are all in this together, and money has limited value as we get there, after all. But as a reward for Ice Age Farmer member level Patreon subscribers, I went ahead and established also a real-time group over Slack for continuing discussion in between shows and group research and general community building. So if you're interested in being a part of that, and dollars are short, which I very much understand, go ahead and reach out to me, get in touch. There are other ways that you can support the show, such as, for example, the second thing I wanted to mention. I created an Ice Age Farmer wiki. Creating it and hosting it is something I can do. Something you can do is go to it and share your expertise and your knowledge within this community. It's going to take all of us to contribute our own experiences and learnings as we sort of map the path forward here. And I would love to, I've opened this up so that we can sort of begin to construct a knowledge base. Now, I don't want to recreate Wikipedia or the Farmer's Almanac or any of the resources out and about there, but what I do think makes sense here is to augment, is sort of to put a layer of Ice Age Farmer, Grand Solar Minimum specific flavor on top of links to other resources. So whereas there's just innumerable number of resources about how to grow in sustainable ways, about permaculture, about self-sufficient ways to be more self-sufficient on your own homestead, you know, obviously this information is everywhere out there, is ubiquitous. But what does make sense is for us to go out, and I've described this before, and collect these resources and assemble them in a way that really makes sense and speaks to the future that you and I here at Ice Age Farmer know we're facing and we're trying to find a path forward. So I've created the Ice Age Farmer Wiki for that purpose specifically, and I invite you to go check it out and to contribute to it if you feel that you can do so. It's open to anyone, and that is available at wiki.iceagefarmer.com. I am also looking for folks to help populate and curate and moderate that wiki. So if you're interested, again, please reach out, iceagefarmer@gmail.com. I'd love to start that conversation. All right, with that, let's go ahead and launch into the icebreaker here, which is Black Monday, the day in 1360 when a hailstorm killed an estimated 1,000 English soldiers in Chartres, France. The storm and the devastation it caused also played a part in the Hundred Years' War between England and France. I'll continue reading. The Hundred Years' War began in 1337. By 1359, King Edward III of England was actively attempting to conquer France. In October, he took a massive force across the English Channel to Calais. The French refused to engage in direct fights and stayed behind protective walls throughout the winter while Edward pillaged the countryside. In April 1360, Edward's forces burned the Paris suburbs and began to move towards Chartres. While they were camped outside the town, a sudden storm materialized. Lightning struck, killing several people, and hailstones began pelting the soldiers, scattering the horses. One described it as, quote, a foul day, full of mist and hail, so that men died on horseback. Two of the English leaders were killed, and panic set in among the troops, who had no shelter from the storm. The heavy losses suffered by the English were seen by many as a sign from God. King Edward was convinced to negotiate peace with the French. On May 8, 1360, the Treaty of Brittany was signed, marking the end of the first phase of the Hundred Years' War. Edward agreed to renounce all claims to the throne of France, though he was given control of land in the north of the country. Fighting resumed a mere 9 years later when the King of France declared war, claiming Edward had not honored that treaty. The last phase of the Hundred Years' War did not end until 1453. The largest hailstone recorded in modern times was found in Aurora, Nebraska. It was 7 inches in diameter, about the size of a soccer ball, and hail typically falls at about 100 miles per hour. So there we see an example of extreme, out-of-season weather events absolutely changing the course of history, as I believe is happening right now again. All right, let's move on to the community feedback. Some messages from folks in the Ice Age Farmer community. Sean C. writes in to check out the Farmer's Almanac. Surprisingly, some good information, or perhaps not surprisingly, some great information could be found in there. I perused a couple of editions and actually extracted a couple tips as examples I wanted to share with you today that might be applicable. One was that when you mulch with dark rocks, that they're actually able to absorb the heat from sunlight and then radiate into the plant's roots that heat, which can keep the plant thriving, as we know, even in cooler temperatures. If the leaves above are getting a little too cold, which they will, then as long as the roots below are kept warm, plants are able to sustain a bit more than you would expect in those cooler temperatures. Things can usually endure. So mulching with dark rocks might be something that you can do to suck the heat out of the sunlight and then keep it in your beds. And then as well, when saving seeds, Farmer's Almanac's recommendation was to add a bit of powdered milk to absorb some of the moisture and make sure that your seeds last longer. I would add to that that white rice, white rice can be used. I use that, in fact, to keep my stored ammunition dry. So sort of a multi-purpose desiccant for storing seeds or lead, whatever you need to be focusing on at the time. But both of those obviously are best kept dry, and so that's one way to do it. Now, Jay Thompson has written in. He's got some advice on the alternative building methods. He writes, I have a geodesic dome greenhouse. The storm resistance is a major feature for its use. We have two windy seasons a year and get sustained winds upwards of 40 miles an hour and gusts over 55 miles an hour. Mine also use Solex as the covering, which yields better growth of plants. It has been in operation for 4.5 years now. It is a passive four-season model using an 800-gallon water tank. A couple of years ago, we had a bout of very low temperatures, down to minus 20 at night, and then highs of only 14 during the day. I'm sure he means Fahrenheit. The greenhouse never went below 45, using only the passive system to heat it. Expense may be an issue with the geodesic dome greenhouses. The 22-foot diameter one was $10,000. You might consider building a modified earthship using tire walls for the north and half of the east and west walls, and then covering with Solex or similar glaze the rest. You could probably do this for about $1,000 if you build it yourself in that method. Some good advice there. Daryl writes in with some advice on using tires to grow potatoes. So his advice is to put a first tire down on the ground and fill it with soil and your seed potatoes. And then as they grow, to use straw or hay to hill them. You may or may not need a second tire as you continue building that up, but just to continue recovering those plants until they die off, and then dig in and find your sweet, sweet potatoes. He says he's used this method to grow white, purple, red, and sweet potatoes. Now, Anthony from Australia writes in, seems to confirm this method. He adds a bit more information. Use good sandy soil that's not too rich in humus material. Cut 4 good-sized seed potatoes in half, exposing at least 2 shoots each, and place them on top of 4 inches of the soil around the edge. Add soil to the tire whenever the shoots appear, and add another tire and fill with more soil as you keep building it up. You can do this up to 4 tires high, so he takes it even further. Wait for the top to die out before you harvest the potatoes. If they're placed in a warm, sunny position and they're regularly watered, and one good thing I want to inject here is that the tires are actually, again, like the black rocks that we mentioned earlier, the tires will do similarly, will take heat, will absorb the heat from the sunlight and sort of make this whole potato tire tower a bit warmer than you might expect it to be otherwise. So, if you place these things in warm, sunny positions and keep them watered, you can get up to 50 kilos of potatoes, and in a temperate climate, grow them all year round. The black tires absorb the heat from the sun to keep the soil warm, even during frost. Pontiac potatoes are the best results for him, but other types might do well as well, as Daryl mentioned. Cheers from Australia. Thanks, Anthony. David writes in, If peanuts grow in your area, plant some of these guys. They fix nitrogen, and then alternate protein sources to farm include worms, apple snails, which I've not heard of and need to look into, pigeons, and guinea pigs. All of these will survive by eating scraps, and if they're prepared right, are pretty darn tasty. He adds, the time to learn how to garden and live off the land is now, before things take a turn for the worse. Totally agree, David, and thanks for writing in. Linda writes, I have a small garden and will usually put out 2 to 10 foot rows of sweet potatoes. Last year, off of those 2 rows, I got 6 gallons of potatoes. They stored all winter in the garage, and when they started sprouting in the spring, I just cut them and planted them for this year. This works great, they taste delicious. And after you dig in the fall, just allow them to cure for a couple weeks to get the best flavor. So thanks all those on the potato tips. I will be revisiting briefly just the fact that potatoes are in fact one of the most calorie-dense foods, which is part of the answer to the question coming up here. Finally, Patricia writes in and mentions that we need to investigate lasagna gardening. I looked at it briefly, and it is a no-till method, which I very much support, of farming, both because it doesn't kill off the ground and requires less manual labor, which is always a good thing. If we want to actually get into this a little bit more, when you till the soil, you know, you do get good results, but that's because you have killed off everything that's in it, and so you've basically amended the soil with all of the stuff that you killed off. The problem, though, is that this is not sustainable. If you just keep tilling your soil, you keep killing it over and over, you don't get the same results and over. It's a diminishing return. And that's why I think no-till methods are the way to go. And I think you'll agree if you actually look into this and try it out. You build the soil up over time, and are using, if you especially when you're doing cover cropping, and we need to check into this lasagna gardening. I invite anyone that's got some experience with that to let me know how it's working for them. And the focus is to be building your soil at all times and not just tilling it and killing it and reaping the results in the short term, but obviously suffering long term. All right, as I mentioned, the questions that I wanted to answer today, and I'm kind of bleeding these sections together because that's why I've saved some of this feedback that I just mentioned until today. The questions I wanted to hit are, what are the most nutrient-dense crops? Among the folks asking that was furred. And then also, and I want to just sort of take these at the same time, what are some of the cold hardy varieties of these that would make sense to be aware of and to try as we enter the grand solar minimum and can expect cooler temperatures and less energy coming from the sun? Now, I've got to mention, it's obligatory that Moringa and Spirulina, and if you are a listener to the podcast or to my YouTube channel, you know that I am experimenting with Moringa and Spirulina and very much enjoying the results on both. Those are nutritional powerhouses, and it is hard to find any single crop that will approach the breadth and depth of nutrition you get from those two things. Spirulina, of course, is an algae, which can be farmed in an aquarium tank. And Moringa are tropical trees that are prolific, so they grow very quickly, and you can basically prune them and harvest that and eat those leaves, cook them up and put them in a stir fry or whatever you want to do. I actually don't mind eating I think the shoots, delicious, like they're packaged in Taiwan, are fantastic. And probably have more nutrition than if you actually cook them down, as is generally the case. But to go ahead and sort of answer this question in a more whole way, I think it's worth mentioning two different aspects of this question. There's first is the calories. How are we going to cover our caloric needs on a daily basis? We need to have the energy to move around and to fuel our bodies. And as I already mentioned earlier, potatoes are one of the best ways to get a lot of calories out of a small area. Now, those potato towers we described earlier are pretty promising. But let's keep building on this answer. What else? We also need to have protein in these calories. So let's look at peas. Shell and snap peas are definitely something that is a valuable addition to the garden. I also love pea microgreens. But these are, you know, nitrogen-fixing legumes. And so they will be increasing the fertility of your soil, as well as they're very nutrient dense and are super easy to grow. So these are one that you're definitely gonna wanna include in your garden, and then you can use in your rotation to be fixing the nitrogen year after year. Soybeans, another legume, they're easy to grow, they're quite productive. They are very protein rich, and they're very easy to store. They can be eaten in a variety of ways, including raw. The plant also increases soil fertility, and those are actually a whopping 380 calories per cup of soybeans. Beyond that, field beans, I think field or dry beans, which includes, you know, basically any kind of dry bean. There are different types that are adapted to different environmental conditions, and what grows for you might be different than what grows for me. I like garbanzo beans. In fact, the ones that I've been growing lately, because they are the ones that I like to include in my protein-rich sprouting mix, are a combination of garbanzo, mung, I already mentioned peas, add zucchinis, and then lentils. I'll mix all of these together and sprout them for a protein power mix like that you can find in some organic stores. But it's much cheaper, obviously, if you do this and grow these at home yourself. Plus, it's sustainable. All right, let's keep going. Carrots are a very easy way to grow. It's a root crop. It stores well. It's nutrient dense. Great source of beta carotene. Beets are a double whammy. It's almost like cheating because you'll get the beet tops, the greens, which are nutritious and tasty. And then the beet root stores very well and has a good amount of caloric and nutritional content. Brussels sprouts are a good spring and fall crop for your garden. They tolerate cool and cold weather. They keep well into the cold months, even on the stalk. Some varieties are quite prodigious and can produce quite a bit of Brussels sprouts per square foot of garden space. They're a great source of minerals and nutrients and are, in general, I think a good addition here. I also want to mention cabbage. It's another cold-tolerant crop. It can survive a frost. It's pretty hardy. It stores well. Some varieties will grow heads up to 22 pounds in size. Probably not if there's reduced solar output, but that's the boilerplate there. And it offers excellent productivity per square foot of garden space. Cabbage is also something that you can, as you know, use to in a lacto-fermentation way. If you want to have some sauerkraut or that kind of thing, lacto-fermentation, obviously a great way to get probiotics and make sure that you keep your gut flora surviving, which is a key way to keep your health and wellness up. Let's call out garlic. It's actually got a surprisingly high calorie density. It can be grown in a broad variety of climates. It's pretty hardy and it's easy to grow. It stores extremely well. It's got health benefits that are too numerous to even get into. I mean, this is basically a medicine in a number of ways. And I love it. It tastes great. My wife won't touch it, so that's an issue, but we'll cover that in a different episode. Consider adding that to your garden. And then squash, along with beans and corn. Squash was one of the original three sisters in American Indian agriculture. Squash is a vining crop. It stores well and has a good balance of nutrients and calories. You could also try pumpkins and melons in addition to squash. So as far as varieties, now your mileage may vary here, but the ones that I had mentioned previously, as far as tomatoes, you can find a Northern Ruby, a Subarctic Plenty, and a Tigerella. These tend to be the hardier side of tomatoes. Now, obviously, tomatoes are not going to survive a big frost, but these are the more tolerant varieties. On the squash, in fact, for the summer squashes, you can find a Desi and a Gray Zucchini variety of summer squash, which tend to be hardier than most. And so too with winter squash, the Yukon and Zucchino Rampicante are the most cold-tolerant varieties of winter squash that I have been able to find in my research. If you want to see more of these varieties that are cold-hardy, check out the Ice Age Farmer video number 5, Sourcing Seeds and Cold-Hardy Varieties, which is on YouTube and can be found on the blog, icehfarmer.com. But those are the varieties of specifically of the crops that I had just enumerated as calorie and nutrition powerhouses. Jim C. writes in with some information that I think just beautifully fits into this question. He writes, "Dear Christian, I am a raw vegan. My wife and I grow most of the food we consume year-round. As a raw vegan, it is important to me that I get enough protein. Much advice online is simply repetition of other misinformation, typically taught and passed along, especially about protein and what types of proteins and calories you need. You need more than just calories, and you never need corn, potatoes, soybeans, wheat, barley, etc. The idea of growing them and harvesting them is simply absurd and is based on our commercial agriculture. He suggests instead, use the square foot gardening system to grow and rotate your crops. mix your own perfect soil, grow different varieties of heirloom spinach, romaine lettuce, and dino kale, and you will have an abundance of protein. There isn't time for me now to refute the standard bad advice from other survival sites, but ill-informed information in most survival articles on the web and prepper articles on the web. You can grow tomatoes, cucumbers, squash, peas, and carrots, all of which are very easy to grow. They're easy to regrow from seed under normal circumstances. You just let a few plants go to seed, and they will give you fresh food to eat. I also very much recommend avocado trees, fruit trees, and nut trees. Nuts are easy to store, and if you plant Haas, Fuerte, and Reed varieties of avocado trees, you will have avocados all year round, if you live in a climate or can afford them an environment that will support their growth. I have started a Haas avocado tree. I actually started with 9 different seeds, and 2 of them grew, and only one of them has continued until it's got a year of growth underneath it right now. Typically, those won't give fruit. This is me, sorry, not Jim speaking. Typically, you won't get fruit from those in your first few years, but perhaps we can find a way to change that or accelerate that with electroculture, or who knows. Back to Jim. Where were we? You can practically live on avocados. They are a great source of EFAs, essential fatty acids. If you want to grow a commercial type crop that stores well, grow bush beans or garbanzo beans, which we just mentioned. Get organic ones, soak them, and plant them. Then you know you can harvest the crop and plant some of those to keep it going. I wish you all the best for the Grand Solar Minimum. Thanks for all your work. Jim, thanks for that great information. I agree a little bit with some of your opinion on whether or not corn and soybeans and wheat and barley make sense. I mean, they are very space-intensive crops to grow, and they don't really fit into my primal approach to eating. If I had to put a name to the sort of the way that I feed my body, or the way that the foods that my body seems to like, that's sort of the primal diet, which is eating fats instead of carbs, is the bottom line. But yeah, fresh vegetables and good healthy fats.
That's a whole nother show altogether.
But I do think potatoes can fit in there. I think they can be, especially when you use some of the vertical approaches we've described here, the potato towers. You can get a lot of potatoes out of not that much area, and that is, you know, it's starchy, but you need those calories, I think.
But then, just as we all put different things in our bodies, we're all going to be growing and using different things and methodologies to thrive in the times ahead. So what is it that you intend to put into your survival garden, your resilient source of food security? Let me know, icehfarmer@gmail.com, or add a comment below.
And with that, let's go ahead and get into our crop focus of the day. This inaugural crop focus is on sunflower, which is something that I have been growing for quite some time as microgreens, and as well growing to fruition and to seed, so that I could make the growing of more microgreens sort of a complete cycle, right? Growing to seed means you can do the next tray from the flowers that you had last season, and I'd like that to be eventually a complete cycle. It's going to take quite a few sunflowers to power all of those trays of sunflower microgreens, and how many exactly I don't yet know, but I'll keep working on that. Today I'll be reading from Seed to Seed, which I mentioned last time, and to which I will put a link below. North and South American Indians used sunflower plants in their entirety. The stalks were used for bean poles and animal fodder, and were peeled into thin sheets for use like paper. Immature leaves, flower petals, and roots were all cooked as vegetables. Mature leaves were used as a tobacco substitute and for animal feed. Some tribes even used the empty seed compartments in the flower head as containers for dye and paint. Many Indian varieties have retained tribal references in their names, such as Apache Brown Stripe, Hopi Black Dye, and Tarahumara White. Sunflowers are grown commercially for oil and for seed. Oil seed sunflowers have been specifically selected for high oil content. The large seeded varieties are preferred as snacks. In home gardens, sunflowers are often grown as flowers and for bird seed. Now, the ones I grow for microgreens are the black sunflowers. They don't get terribly large, which means that you can cycle them pretty quickly when you're growing them to seed. So, sunflowers are outbreeding plants. Each sunflower head can have from 1,000 to 4,000 individual florets that are perfect and usually open for 2 days. On the first day, the anthers release pollen up into the anther tube. On the second day, the stigma pushes up and its two lobes open and are receptive to, but out of reach of, its own pollen. Insects, usually bees, move the pollen around, causing fertilization. It takes 5 to 10 days for all the florets on a single flower head to open. A typical flower head could have dried florets around its outside edge, followed by a ring of the receptive stigmas, and then another ring of pollen-shedding florets, and yet again unopened florets in its middle. Some varieties are self-incompatible, requiring the transfer of pollen from one plant to another, whereas others are self-compatible, so insects need only move the pollen from the floret to the flower on the same flower head. To maintain seed purity, you'll need to isolate varieties by 1/2 to 3 miles, depending on the size of the populations. Hand pollination is possible, but extremely time-consuming. It's not difficult. It just requires that the flower heads be bagged before the first florets open. Each day for 10 days, remove those bags from two adjacent plants and gently rub the surfaces of the flower heads together. Continue down the row, unbagging and rebagging the flowers. This method will effectively pollinate both self-incompatible and self-compatible varieties. Now, seed production and harvesting. When the sunflower head is completely filled out and the flower petals have fallen off, the head can be cut and dried in a protected area. Protection from birds is crucial. Blue jays have actually been known to fly into rooms through open doors to steal sunflower seeds. The seeds can be removed from the flower heads when it's no longer soft or damp. To clean large numbers of flowers, rub sunflower heads across a 1x1 welded wire screen placed over a 5-gallon pail. Cut the wire 12 inches larger than the diameter of the pail and mold the wire down over its sides. Place the container between your knees, rub the sunflower head against that wire, and the seeds will fall right into that container. Using your thumb and index finger, grasp each end of a shelled sunflower seed and try to bend it. Seeds which snap in two instead of bending are sufficiently dry now for storage. Most seeds will need some additional drying. Place a 1-inch layer of seeds in baskets or containers and finish drying them in a warm area away from direct sunlight. Statistics. Sunflower seeds will remain viable for 7 years when stored in a cool, dry, dark location, not far from your ammo. Members of the Seed Savers Exchange annually offer about 32 different varieties. The Garden Seed Inventory lists 35 varieties. The Federal Germination Standard is about 75%. To grow sunflower from seed, sunflowers are annuals adapted to a wide range of climates, usually direct seeded. They should be covered 1/2 inch to 1 inch deep. The optimum seed germination temperature is 75 degrees, with germination usually occurring in only 5 to 10 days. Plant or set them out in full sun, thinning to 12 to 18 inches for both food and seed production. On the nutrition front, for microgreens specifically, sunflower sprouts are a complete protein. They are one of the more balanced sources of essential amino acids. They contain many nutrients, including vitamins A, B complex, C, D, and E, some calcium, phosphorus, iodine, iron, potassium, magnesium, and even trace elements, zinc, manganese, copper, and chromium. So it just really packs a powerful punch of nutrition beyond being a raw living food, which is obviously full of life and enzymes that allow you to unlock and digest and absorb the nutrition in other parts of your meal, which is why I just love eating sunflower greens. I can't get enough of them. I really have incorporated them into my daily diet as a bed for eggs or salmon or any other protein on top of sunflowers. I sort of just mix them in with it, whatever. Definitely with smoothies, the spirulina smoothies, I use chiefly peas and sunflower micros as the greens in there. So I think sunflowers are a great and very easy to grow source of nutrition. And that about does it for the instant look at the sunflower. Again, it's black sunflowers that I'm using for the micros, and I'll drop a link to the source of seeds that I'm using below. As well, I have added sunflower crop focus to the Ice Age Farmer Wiki, as this is the first segment and we'll be doing more going forward. So stay tuned. And with that, let's get to the item of the day. Today's item of the day is one that I've been asked for about several times. It is the 45 watt LED grow lamps that I use both for my microgreens and actually as well for my spirulina. It's the Kingbo 45 watt LED grow lamp. It's only $29 on Amazon, and I'm dropping a link to that below in the show notes. I have noticed that at times there's one corner of them that might shock you. So watch out for that, but you can't beat the price, and obviously the plants have been responding really well to it. So I think for $30, it's pretty much a good deal. I am actively looking still right now, sourcing strips of LEDs. I'd especially like to find one that I can control the voltages to the individual colors of LEDs so that we could actually dim and brighten the various frequencies as we want to get plants into different stages, right? So if we get a plant right about to the height that we want to throw it into flowering, then we would crank up the higher frequencies. I have not yet found strips of LEDs that have that will afford me the ability to sort of fine tune what color light is coming out of those strips. But if anyone out there has found something like that, let me know, because I'd love to do some experiments with that, and perhaps we'll follow up with those in the future. All right, if you got anything out of this show or enjoyed yourself, please tell your friends about the show. That's the best way that you can spread the word about it and let folks know what's going on with the crazy climate changes we are seeing. They are looking for answers, if they're at all aware of what's going on, and it is up to us to give them those answers and make sure that they have a path to follow as they come to these conclusions, that being the truth about what's going on, so that they can quickly come up to speed and start then on their own path to self-sufficient living. The more of us, because we're all in this together, that are on those paths, the better we will all be. So we are truly all in this together, and that's why I ask you to spread the word about the show. As well, as I mentioned at the top, we are now on Patreon, on patreon.com/iceagefarmer. And I will remind you briefly that you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Those are handy ways to spread the podcast to your friends who perhaps aren't YouTube watchers. I've put this in as many different mediums as possible to make sure that it is as easy as possible to spread the word. So thanks for doing that. And with that, this has been the episode 10 of the Ice Age Farmer podcast, mapping a path forward to prosperity in the times ahead, building resilient, self-sufficient communities, and sharing knowledge in the grand solar minimum. Let's go build a path forward.